chair that I'd really go for if I was the god figure. Everything in this world, according to Plato, had an equivalent in this perfect world, not just chairs, but also, you know, like colours and virtues, triangles, you know, shapes, and everything here is imperfect. Everything in the spiritual world is perfect. That's his big idea. And to actually illustrate this, and I don't know why I got this one, but I don't know who drew it. I think Johnny drew it. But this is the actual analogy of the cave. Very briefly, all it means is, in fact, the colour hasn't come out very well, but we live our lives as if we were in a cave, and all we see is shadows of reality. The reality is outside with the sun, and the philosophers are outside, but we, the ordinary people, are inside the cave, and all we ever see is the shadows of reality. So we don't see the real world. The real world is outside, but we're trapped inside the cave because we don't know how to leave the cave. Only philosophers know how to leave the cave. They're called the guardians. So that's sort of his idea. Basically, this guardian, this sort of philosopher outside, he's rewarded by, because he's gained enlightenment, he can see the higher good, the sort of the source of all truth and reason. And that's sort of an idea that crept into the church, the idea from Plato that in this spiritual world, there's this sort of perfect goodness. And early Christians looked at that and thought, well, that's sort of similar to our concept of God. And this is where the two worlds started to collide, which caused a lot of problem. So that sort of introduces the idea of Plato's concept of God. We have these forms, and the top one is this higher good. But he's definitely not God. This is not the God that we know. This God figure of Plato is a very impersonal figure. Plato's God doesn't answer prayers, doesn't comfort those in distress, or teach or listen to the cries of our hearts. So Plato's God is not our God. That's a very important concept. There cannot be any sort of working together of this pagan idea with biblical Christianity. Plato believed there are absolute standards for things like goodness and morality, but they only exist in this perfect world. Okay, so what does all this mean? What's the problem with Plato? So how does that affect the church? Well, the main thing is the idea of the body and the soul. Plato believed that we are body and soul, but he thought these were sort of separate entities bound together just in our lives, and our lives are lived with our soul trapped inside our body. And the idea for Plato is that all the soul wants to do is escape our body. And when we die, the soul escapes and joins the other souls and gets reborn. And you know, it's very similar to the Eastern idea of reincarnation and all that. So for him, the body is all it does is trap the soul. The world of the senses, the body, you know, our hearing, seeing, all that, everything we see around us is imperfect. And for him, that meant it was bad. So out of all this, we get the idea of his big consequence, which is body is bad, soul is good. Plato's big consequence. And that simple concept, but that one idea has got through the whole of Christianity, even to now, sort of 2,000 years later. So that sort of very, very brief introduction to him. We're going to look at Aristotle's, or mostly this afternoon. He was Plato's pupil, so we had Socrates, then Plato, then Aristotle. And Aristotle is the man who was the tutor for Alexander the Great, which meant as Alexander the Great conquered the known world at the time, obviously the ideas of Aristotle were able to spread through the Greek Empire. So Aristotle, very clever man. He sort of formulated, what a clever chap I am. I'm sure he believed that, but in fact, it was said that Aristotle was the last man who's ever lived who actually knew everything that there could have been known about the world in which he lived. If you think about it, that's impossible now, because there's so much knowledge that we've discovered. No one person can know everything, apart from Norman, and he hides it well. What? Yeah, he hasn't realised yet. But Aristotle at his time was just said to be so clever. You know, he formulated the principles that have led to, you know, how scientific methodology. And this is his big thing is, you know, logic, deductive logic. This is how the use of the mind came in very much through his teachings. And his sort of thing is everything can be determined through logic and the senses. So whereas Plato was very airy-fairy and spiritual and all that, Aristotle was more earthy, more into sort of the mind and our bodies. So again, we have to say, right, what's all this got to do with the church? Let's find out. In the Apostolic Palace in the Vatican, there is a painting by Raphael. It's known as the School of Athens, and it features a whole load of Greek philosophers. You could probably recognise some of them, some of your favourite philosophers maybe there, but the two in the middle, it's very dark, isn't it? Why is that, John? I don't know, is it the light? Maybe turn one of these lights out. Oh, it's even worse now. Okay, still a bit dark, but that's okay. So in the middle there, we can see Plato and Aristotle in sort of centre view. What is interesting, if you can see their gestures, that Plato, being more spiritually minded, is pointing up to heaven. And I don't know if you can see that, but he is. Take my word for it. And Aristotle is more sort of earthy, sort of looking downwards. And what we're going to find out is why are two philosophers, or in fact the whole painting of philosophers, why were they in a central position in what at the time was at the seat of Christianity, you know, the Catholic Church? Why would they be commemorating pagan philosophers? And the reason is because the pagan philosophers by that time had gained a very big foothold in the minds of the Christians at that time. And we're going to find that the church is going to be well and truly infiltrated by the teachings of Plato and Aristotle. And now we're going to find out how. Part two, infiltration. Right, this is where we are. We have two big things at that time, the rise of Greek philosophy and the birth of the Christian church. And now we have to say, well, ideally, those two should have been kept apart, but in reality, they came together. And so we need to know the story of how this actually happened. The thing about the church is we could look in our model from the Old Testament for Israel itself. And Israel as a nation, as we know, was sort of God created this nation of Israel, the Jewish people in the Old Testament, and he protected them. He did what he could to protect them, to stop all these pagan ideas coming in into Israel, and he gave them the law, the teachings, the Torah. And the point of the Torah is to keep the Jews separate so that they wouldn't become like that lot at the bottom, infiltrated by all the pagan gods that surrounded them. So very much they were sort of a protected people. But despite that, we know they failed. They ended up being exiled a couple of times. You know, they fell away, they intermarried, they took on all the, you know, the bad practices from these pagan gods. So the point being that Israel, even though Israel was given every help it could to stay pure to God, even Israel failed on that score. And this is not, you know, and we're not being anti-Jewish here, we're basically saying that's man, you know, we do fail. So if Israel, with all the help of God, ultimately failed, what possible chance has the church got? Because the church's great commission is to reach out to the world. So if the church is going to reach out to the world, what's to stop the world reaching back into the church? And this is what happened in the early days. Once the church had sort of shed its Jewish roots, once we got to the second generation of church leaders, who were all Gentiles, we find that these Gentiles were primarily coming from the world of philosophy. People like Irenaeus and Justin Martyr, they were primarily philosophers. Then they became Christians, and they were proud philosophers. So they felt they could sort of work the two together. And they saw no problem in Plato and Moses coming together and forming a sort of a hodgepodge because they were not willing to shed their background. So the church became this sort of corporation in the end, and a sort of a merging of pagan ideas into biblical Christianity. And let's see how that actually happened. A philosopher in the 20th century actually said, all of Western philosophy ultimately consists of no more than footnotes to Plato, which is amazing. It just shows you how pervasive his ideas were, Plato, not just in the church, but in philosophy in general. He seemed to be the key to everything. So what Plato did, he founded a sort of seat of learning in Athens called the Academy, and this Academy actually promoted his ideas. So after he died, this philosophy called Platonism started spreading from Athens, and about that time the church was being established. So the church from Jerusalem was sort of going westwards, and this Platonism from Greece was going eastward. They were going to collide, and the church at that time, these philosophers in the church had to decide what to do about this. These church fathers had to say, do we ignore the culture that surrounds us, this Greek culture? Do we engage with it, or do we learn from it? Well, it seems that the engagement perhaps was the best way forwards, but they took it further, and they saw no problem in constructing a Christian worldview in the light of the teachings of Plato. And one of these teachers, Justin Martyr, I mentioned, had the view that the Platonists, those in the secular Greek world, would see so many similarities between their worldview and Christianity that they would convert it'll be easy for them to convert, because they just didn't see too much difference. Well, what started off as an engagement swiftly gave way to debate, then compromise, and then assimilation. And we ended up with sort of Christianity and Platonism just sort of merging together. And this is actually what happened in history. So how could it have happened? Well, we go right back to an earlier time, to about the same time as Jesus. We had a Jewish philosopher called Philo, AD 40. I'm glad you turned the lights out because I can hardly read this. No, it's all right. Right. Philo, so he was a Jew, living about the same time as Jesus. He was part of the diaspora, the dispersion. He was living in Alexandria, in sort of Egypt, with those Jews who had sort of left the fold. They were still Jews, but they were very much in the Greek-speaking world. And Philo had the right motives. He saw the Jews around him becoming more Greek by the day, but Philo, had a love for the Hebrew scriptures. So what he felt he wanted to do is teach the Jews to sort of get back into Moses. But unfortunately, he did that by merging Plato with biblical Christianity. Well, it wasn't Christianity at the time. So the problem was that many Jews trained in Greek ways were, say, rejecting Moses and the Bible. So he worked out this compromise, and he was writing commentaries on like the books of Genesis. But he started coming up with ideas, his commentary on the scripture that came very much from Greek philosophy. And one idea was the idea that I said from Plato that I've got all these things, I'm going to press all the wrong ones, but the idea that the world wasn't created by the God as we know it, but by a power called the Demiurge, that the world is very much physical, therefore, according to Plato, very much an inferior thing. So the God who created our world must have been an inferior God. So he was already starting to separate the physical and the spiritual. And that came from Plato. And it's this concept. He's got a name, and the name is dualism. Dualism came from Plato, and we saw it coming into the ideas of Philo. And from that, he was one of the first to come up with this. Well, he wasn't one of the first, because allegory already existed. It was a Greek technique used by, sort of secular Greeks to actually, sort of analyze, say, poetry and things like that. But Philo felt there was no problem using allegory to actually to understand the Bible. So what is allegory? Well, very briefly, we can give two examples. Most of you probably know this, but for instance, Animal Farm, George Orwell. was an allegory of the Soviet era of Stalin in the pre-war years. So kids would read the book and see the film and just see it as a load of farmyard animals. But those in the know would know, well, the pig, Napoleon the pig, that's Stalin, and all the others had their own sort of equivalents. So it's a story within a story, allegory. It's like, on the face of it, it's an ordinary story, but there are deeper truths coming out of it. So that's an example of allegory. The Wizard of Oz is another one, which I won't go into, but simply the Yellow Brick Road had a lot to do with the gold standard at the time, though the author didn't actually explain totally what the allegory was, but there was allegory in it. Now, the Bible. Now, there's allegory in the Bible, but the thing is, if there is allegory in the Bible, we have to decide, did the author put that allegory in there to teach us something? And we know there's only one author of the Bible, and that is God. So when people like Philo come along and look at the Old Testament and read into what he sees, what the scripture, and put his own ideas of allegory, of what God must have been thinking about, then we realise that man's ideas were coming into Holy Scripture. And this is the beginning of the problems. As I say, it's this allegory that caused the problem. What's that one do? That one's no good. We're just moving on. I'm sort of rushing a little bit, but allegory carried on. The next chap who came along many years later was Origen, one of the church fathers. Origen was a bit of a rascal, and we find a lot of problems in the church can actually be laid at the feet of this philosopher. He just took what Philo said, he took it one stage further, and with Origen, he had no axe to grind about the Jewish people. For him, the scriptures were, or the Jewish people were just, a people of the Old Testament. You know, he wasn't there to convert the Jews or to say anything nice about them. His job was to teach the Christians of his day. But the way that he taught them, was bringing so much stuff from Greek philosophy that we ended up with a bit of a hodgepodge. So what he would do, he would say, this dualism said that everything spiritual is good, everything physical is bad. And so he would look at that as the Bible, look into the Bible and say, well, some of it's meant to be physical, some of it's meant to be spiritual. This is my understanding of what the spiritual bits are. And he'd write his own commentaries, and some of them are a little bit crazy. And out of this, we get things like replacement theology. We get ideas of, 6 days of creation not being exactly 6 days. And lots of ideas from man's mind came into the reading of Scripture. I'm really going quite fast here because I'm looking at the time. We move on. It's the same story. It's just we're moving on in history to probably the most influential early church father of them all, Augustine, who very much respected by Catholics and Protestants through his ideas, but his ideas were simply carrying on the ideas of those who came before. So we can see this link from Augustine back to Origen, back to Philo, back to Plato. So here's Plato is lurking in the corner, sort of the unseen. Though he didn't know at the time, we shouldn't say too many bad things about Plato, because remember, he lived before Jesus, so he didn't mean to ruin the church, but it's just his ideas that came afterwards were sort of seeped into the church. And Augustine, because he was so influential, he wrote books, he wrote The City of God, and it was bringing together Christian understanding with understanding from pagan philosophy. And so we can see, so this is sort of a very brief snapshot of the historical process of how these ideas came in. What we really need to do next is what came out of these ideas, the effects on the church. Right, I think, because I've sort of given you quite a lot of information in a short amount of time. If you want to just sort of stretch your legs just for 5 minutes or so, and then we'll go into the next section. Just give you time for your brains to say five. Well, 10 o'clock, if you want to go to the toilet or whatever. What is time? That's not... Yeah, just 5 minutes and we'll carry on with the next section, so it's not too much in one go. Right. I've got to take time. Just toilets. What's in his toilets?
Yeah, in the reception area, there's the gents in the reception area.
Turn right here.
Yeah. So turn right, go through the lounge. Sorted out where all the groups are going, so all the colours are going everywhere. So the green's going to the games room. There's enough chairs in there already, I've had a look. Norman in the lounge.